This is the MMA Lunch Break with Elijah, Tim, and me, John. Tim actually medaled at the Jiu-Jitsu Pan Ams back in the day. Elijah and I are just guys who like MMA, but we all worked together for years and talked MMA during our lunch break. Now, we do it here on this podcast. This is the MMA Lunch Break.
And we are off. Good to see you guys again.
Cheers.
Hot off of UFC 260. Cheers, 260. Guys. Virtual cheers.
It's a lot of UFCs.
It is a lot of UFCs. And you know what? This one was a, as we like to say in the pro wrestling industry, it was a barn burner.
Well, you're in the pro wrestling?
No.
You're into that?
It's whatever.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, it
on,
was.
Guys. That was crazy.
It was nuts. It was nuts.
Before we do the full 260,
yeah,
other things happened too. Mm-hmm. There was the Edwards Muhammad fight night.
Yes.
And there was the Brunson Holland.
Yep.
We don't have to talk about those full cards unless somebody wants to talk about them, but
I feel like
we should hit those real quick.
At least the two title cards.
Okay, so the furthest one back was the Leon Edwards versus Bilal Muhammad.
Yes.
Which was a super disappointment the way that one ended.
Super disappointment with the eye poke of all eye pokes.
Yeah.
So
his eye was bleeding. It was like a movie.
I think
there was blood coming out of his eye.
That still that they showed was like the finger went in
and pulled out
the bottom eyelid.
Yeah.
And like split it.
I don't know
that I saw all. It split the eyelid. I didn't see.
I think that's what it was. It went like all the way in his eye, and then
it was bad because he dropped immediately, and then started wailing, started crying, and I don't know if that was emotional because he realized that was it, like he couldn't continue.
I thought it was because he couldn't see, and he was like,
maybe. Yeah,
oh.
I thought it was because he realized that. Well, maybe a little bit of both, but he. I thought the emotion was coming out because he realized that was his shot and it just ended right there.
And it sucks too because the whole thing with Bilal is that he's kind of a grinder.
Yep.
So he needs the whole clock
and all the rounds.
Yeah. So like Edwards was piecing him up, but it was like, kind of what happens. You know, like
he takes him. He takes the shots.
So just kind of, that was just a huge bummer. But then did you guys watch? So if we're just powering ahead to get to 260.
Yeah.
Did you guys
watch
Brunson Holland? Did you actually watch it?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think was going on?
I need to be refreshed, actually.
Okay, so I'll refresh you. Kevin Holland on this massive tear, right?
Yes.
And Brunson's also on a mini tear of his own, sort of coming back. I think he switched camps. His hair is blonde. It looks cool, all that. And Holland has been blasting people.
Yep.
And this is his first main event. And he is dancing, singing, talking to Khabib, who is sitting next to Dana
White
outside the ring.
That's right.
Asking him for wrestling advice.
Yep.
Like talking and dancing in the ring, laughing in the ring as he's just losing every round.
Oh, yep.
Not every round. But
the thing that I remember was that after the fight was over and they're about to announce who wins, like the ref is holding both of their hands. And then when Bruce Buffer announced Derek Brunson's name, Kevin Holland like raised his hands like he won as a joke. And I was like, dude, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, it got weird.
And then
in the aftermath, I was hearing a whole bunch of different stuff where it was like, some people were like, oh, you know, like he's a shit talker. This is what he does. You know, you love it when he's winning, but you don't like it when he's losing. And it was like, no, that's not what I saw. At least what I saw was like, everyone has a different way they handle stress or they handle embarrassment or something like that. And some people laugh off embarrassment.
Yeah.
And that to me looked like he was in over his head with the wrestling and was giving himself an out. I don't really care about this. So like, you know, I'm just going to laugh. And then when I lose, it'll just be like, oh, I don't really care. You know, like it's not a big deal.
It's like a super unprofessional way to conduct yourself in the ring. I mean,
the announcers didn't like that either. I actually don't mind that much. I mean, to your point, you deal with it the way that you can deal with it. And you can either take it super serious, you know, and get super mad about it and frustrated about it, or you can laugh it off like that. I don't know that either way of handling it is going to change the outcome.
100%. Brunson just had the right game plan.
Yeah, that was you're right. That's exactly what he needed to do.
And what I will say though is I was just fascinated by it with Haaland because I had never seen someone just like put off the air that they really just don't care. Mm-hmm. And so I watched all of his interviews after the fact and it was fascinating. He's like, he handled that almost the exact opposite of what you would expect. He was like really profoundly disappointed in how disappointed everyone around him was.
Right.
Almost like he didn't realize how much people had put their like stake in him.
And by stake, you mean money.
Well, no, but like his trainers and
like his coaches and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
his coach, right. So he handled it like a champ. And I feel like I'm almost more excited for him now after that loss.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Any press is good press, right? It got your eyes on him and it got you to watch all of his post fight stuff.
Dude, and he is powerful. There were a couple times in there where Brunson, I was like, this is imperative that this goes to the ground.
Is a tank himself. And to see him get, you know, give some respect to those hands was it said a lot about Kevin, I think.
Those are two cool fights, though.
Yeah.
Those are two great fight night cards, I thought.
One thing about that fight night, the Brunson-Holland one, Tai Tuivasa fought some no-name Harry Hunsucker guy. Did you guys see him knock this guy out? He had no business being in the ring.
I remember that. Yeah, that was vicious. It looked like nothing affected Tuivasa, and those leg kicks, man, were so hard. Everything was hard.
It looked like the guy had never had a professional fight before, and I'm pretty sure this was his first fight in the UFC for sure. But yeah, that was one I was like, oh man, they're allowing this to happen. It was kind of crazy. It was kind of scary.
I did have one. I'm trying to figure out. I made like cryptic notes to myself about a couple of these fights, and I was trying to find it.
I mean, there was Griffin.
Okay. Yeah. So there was a couple fights on the Brunson Haaland card, which was a sick card. Now I'm remembering it. That full card was awesome.
Yeah.
It was a classic fight night where it's like every single person on it had something to prove, and every fight was really cool. And so going down it, there was at bantamweight, Adrian Yanez versus Gustavo Lopez. Yanez looked like, that was right after the Tuivasa fight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yanez looked like a future contender, like out of the gate, TKO in the third round, where he just took a round to calibrate distance and was like really kind of calm and slow in the first round. And then the second two rounds was just like a laser sniper. So if you didn't watch that one, I'm sure because it was a fight night, you just go find it. But Adrian Yanez looked like a future contender
coming up.
There was also the fight right after it, Cheyenne Bays
and versus Montserrat Ruiz. Yeah,
and Montserrat literally bulldog headlocked her.
Yep,
three straight rounds, and Bays could do nothing about it.
Yeah,
and then there was actually a little controversy.
Yeah, there's a thing at the end.
But then she actually came out, I think, yesterday and admitted that Ruiz didn't spit on her.
Let me hear what the controversy was. I don't know.
So basically, she said that Montserrat, the lady who won, spit on her during the fight.
And it looked like that happened.
It looked like
right at the end.
And then later on, she admitted it wasn't.
Oh, right. There was a little scuffle afterward, too, I remember.
Yeah, it was over. And Montserrat like did like a, you know, like the action of like, you know, like spitting or like getting in your face or something.
And then Cheyenne jumped up.
Right. And it looked like that she was saying puta or bit, or, you know, like she was just, she was like saying a word that maybe spits right in her face after she had won. And it was just like, to me, it just looked like really unprofessional, but like it's a fight. So I don't know. I'm like, whatever, it's a fight.
Yeah. Still emotion. Yeah.
But the more interesting thing to me though, was it was almost like watching what's the male heavyweight who's really old who only does Ezekiel chokes and he gets everyone with Ezekiel chokes? Alexei Oleinik.
Oleinik, yeah.
Montserrat reminded me of that, where it was like Headlock. Like old school, like you're beating up your brothers. Like,
yeah. And then look for that hip toss.
Yeah. She put her in a headlock and then just like dragged her to the ground in a headlock for three rounds straight.
And smashed her.
That was it. One technique. It was crazy. I don't know. I have only seen that once before. and it came in the form of Ezekiel chokes.
Yep. Yeah.
Interesting. But then the Max Griffin song,
dude, that was
King
like,
Fight was sick.
That was crazy. Song came in with like a leg kick and straight over the top. And he took two to the head up against the fence and it was over. It's very
Griffin. Griffin looked amazing.
This is the problem with waiting 2 weeks to talk about a fight for me.
I know.
Okay. It falls right out of my head.
Yeah. But so
I have to take the notes. That's on me.
My big takeaway though is Yanez bantamweight. Because bantamweight is crazy.
Like you were saying, there's a lot of action.
Dude, he looked
his hands so targeted.
He's like so unassuming. He doesn't look like anything
boy.
I don't know. Like all these guys are projecting with their tats, you know, like it's or they're like shredded or something, and he kind of was nothing like that. He
just
sort of looked like a guy. Anyway, that was a cool fight.
All right.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So many fights. Let's get to it. UFC 260, Miocic versus Ngannou. By the way, the cable company in England did like a series of promotional posters for Miocic Ngannou in the style of the Pride posters that they did. They were awesome looking. So like, remember in Pride, Mirko Krokop used to wear the same like red and white checkered shorts, and they did a poster with that. And then, they did it exactly in the same way. If you haven't seen it,
it's the Croatian flag, right?
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, you got to look that up. It looks awesome. Because
Stipe's Croatian.
Yeah.
And so it's such a perfect. Yeah. It was
it's
cool.
A perfect. And when Miocic was it, when he first came into the UFC, he used to wear those tights just like Krokop. It was awesome. And then they use Ngannou for the butterfly poster, and that looked sick too. I know it sounds dumb the way that I'm explaining it over this podcast, but definitely look that up. It was an awesome, awesome promotional material. Let's get into it, man.
Okay.
Yeah, how should we go through it?
Let's just start from the bottom and move up.
Yeah, start from the bottom.
So early prelims, it was Marc-Andre Barriola versus Abu Azaitar. And this was one of the most one-sided.
Wait, where are you?
I'm in early prelims.
Early prelims, so yeah. I went through the short prelims just because I know there's something exciting. I'll skip a couple of them. Go ahead.
So this fight went three rounds and was ended by the ref at 4 minutes and 54 seconds. This was a one-sided beat. The Abu Azaitar guy couldn't do anything. He just kept on getting mounted and getting beat up, and that was it. So, I mean, that was the fight. Do you guys have anything else to add to that?
I would if I had seen it.
But it was really one-sided. Yeah, I mean, it was just really one-sided. I mean, okay, let's move on.
Listen, the early prelims, that's where you see stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these are up-and-comers, challenging, sometimes people's first fight in the UFC. So it can be pretty one-sided.
Moving on to the prelims, Shane Young versus Omar Morales. Omar Morales wins by decision, unanimous decision. But both of these guys are known for like they're striking and like dynamic fighting, but it was just a real snoozer for me.
Yeah. And guys like not to be dismissive of anyone that could clearly.
No, that's neither here nor there. I'm third party, you know, armchair analyst status.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I could stand a chance against these gentlemen. Absolutely not. But this fight was boring.
The only thing I wanted to say is if you're in the featherweight weight class, and you are not absolutely lighting people on fire.
It's going to be tough to get noticed.
Yes. Yeah.
This is not the way to get noticed.
the top 10 is a very, very scary place.
Right. Grinding out three rounds is not going to get you noticed.
Agreed. And this is an aside. Do we mention the Ben Askren, Jake Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about it a little bit because I'm not really that.
Should we do that now or should we do that at the end?
Let's talk about it now. You know, yeah. I mean,
okay.
So Ben Askren is going to be in a boxing match with Logan Paul, Jake Paul.
And the only reason I mention it here is that what we just said, like, oh, you know, like it's hard to talk crap about someone who, you know, could destroy you. Mm-hmm. They had the press conference. And Jake Paul came off looking like a scared child.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah.
Ben Askren came off looking like he's going to murder him.
Right.
And
and what he said in the press conference was, Jake, like, why are you acting so tough? If I saw you in the back alley here, I would just do a homicide to you. Or like, yeah. he was like, I would just homicide you. And that's how he chose to say it. Was like, I would just do a homicide, Jake.
And you know how he is. He's very like matter of fact, not a lot of emotion. And then so like you see this kid who's like, you know, taller and younger, whatever, getting visibly rattled by, you know, the master of shit talking, Ben Askren.
Of course.
And then it culminated when they're doing a stare down and then Ben Askren kind of pie faces him.
Yeah.
Like as he's walking away. And then he could not handle it. And he shoved Ben Askren. And it was just, oh my gosh. They're selling.
New prediction for that. Uh-huh. I went from being like, oh man, it'll be interesting. Like Jake Paul's bigger. He can hit pretty hard.
No way.
Now it's, he's going to come out and go crazy for two rounds and be totally spent. And then Ben will just grind on him.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. They're boxing. They're not.
I was going to say, it's a straight boxing match,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So.
Okay.
I mean, even then, man. This is a guy.
He's just going to rough him up for the last six rounds or what? It's eight rounds, I think. He's going to have energy for two, and then he's going to be so gassed. Ben's just going to be mauling him for six rounds.
Yep. They're selling this pay per view for $50 American.
I know. It's crazy.
$50.
We don't need to spend too much time on that, but that's the way I feel with these guys where it's like, I don't want to talk shit about anyone who would just do a homicide to me if I saw them on the street. Literally everyone we're talking about, with the exception of maybe like 125er who's not ranked.
No, even
just
then,
from
man,
sheer size.
Even then, I get my ass whipped for sure. All right.
But moving on. I did not watch
Modestas Bukauskas. Did you? Are you watching it now? Are you watching it now, Tim? Can Tim hear?
Oh, sorry. I was trying to watch the
Michael Ola. Uh-huh. Okay. So, I mean, it was split decision. Michael Ola. I'm not even going to try to say his last name. I can't say it.
Who?
So we'll just skip over that one.
We're going to skip over that.
Yep.
Okay.
The next two, though.
These are, we got to talk about them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Is he a cousin?
I think so. He's definitely related with
them.
There's
a couple. There's a Nurmagomedov in Bellator.
That's his little brother, I think.
There's a few Nurmagomedovs, and I'm forgetting which one's which. Mm-hmm. But Abubakar is a striker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looks really good on his feet.
Well, no. I mean, let's not say. Yeah.
Okay, he.
That's the surprise that you
for
see
a guy with that last name.
Yes, you know he has the grind in him. You know that's in his blood. But to see him come out there against somebody like Jared, who's long, quick, and actually best him with his hands, I think that's when it became a real problem for Jared. Was you're thinking you're going to come out there and your strategy is, I'll just keep him off me. I'll keep him at the end of my punches. And then he's still getting inside and still getting some good shots on you. I think that's when your confidence starts to wane, right?
Yeah, that's got to be.
And Abubakar looked, he's like built different too.
Yeah,
he's real tight, stayed way tight, had good foot movement. Yeah.
Just a totally different animal. And I don't know. I was just expecting with his last name, it was just going to be
Wrestle
Khabib
Smash,
because we just saw Islam Makhachev. And I think it was maybe like the Khabib.
We didn't see as much grinding because, as I understood it, he was trying to make a point there because, you know, Jared had made a comment about that's all those guys do is grind, pull you to the ground and grind you out. Abubakar stayed on his feet.
He looked great
for most of that fight. I think with the intent to you know,
and then highlight but then I was just thinking they're welter, right? That's 170.
Yes. Yep.
And think about the top of 170. It's just all turning into these elite level wrestlers everywhere. So then to me, a guy like him who has way, way better striking than who? Colby, you know, than all these other wrestlers and stuff. We just saw Colby versus Usman turn into a kickboxing match because their wrestling was basically just a stalemate.
Right.
So then imagining a guy like Abubakar near the top with his level of striking.
He should fight Tyron Woodley.
Well, we'll get to that. I have actually thoughts. But yeah.
Fights again.
Yeah, but so just Abubakar to me was like, whoa, boy, this might be.
He's going to have no fear. He's going to have no fear of being taken down because it's just not going to happen. Or even if he does, he'll deal with that. So
do you think that the credit should be given to that camp? Because Khabib has the same... I mean, I'm just as impressed with him when I see him stand there with somebody like Conor McGregor or Justin Gaethje, where he's like, okay, we can stay standing up and I'll throw some hands and I'll do some damage. Well, I'll threaten you and then maybe you'll want to go to the ground.
But what is the name of the academy?
Top Team.
No, it's American Kickboxing.
AKA. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so I think I think their coach's background was striking and they just... You know, all these wrestlers and stuff came there. So to me, it's just for the modern
you're right,
MMA,
because it's a two coach system over there, right?
They don't ever exclude other coaches. So for Khabib, it was always like his dad and his people with Javier Mendez
putting
it together. Yeah, and so Javier sort of serves as the coach of the whole team, but they all have their like special. So you see the head cornerman for Abubakar and for Islam was Khabib.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Javier's there, but he's not the person in the cage talking. And
yeah.
So to me, they've just got a thing over there now. And apparently DC was saying that Khabib is training, sparring with these guys, that he's retired, but he is like fully in on coaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's working with Rockhold on his comeback too.
So can you imagine what that camp is like though? Yeah. Like it must just be... There must be people quitting every day.
Like, right.
Just not interested in fighting all of these guys every day. But you know who is going to go there for a little while? Kevin Holland.
Oh.
Apparently he reached out to DC or DC reached out to him or something like that. And he knows that his wrestling is the thing that needs work. And so he's just going to go grind with those guys for a while. It's like, man, I cannot wait. I cannot wait to see what Kevin Holland looks like after sparring with
Khabib,
you know,
all
Abubakar
the time.
And you know, all these dudes.
It is crazy. I mean, it is good to see fighters that take a loss like that and they go back and then they work on the thing that they were beaten by.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? One guy that went to Bangkok.
He came
back and
Khalil Roundtree.
Roundtree. And he looked
at
like
205.
He looked like a completely different animal.
Actually, I have a reference for him later on in this
okay,
discussion
good.
Because
okay.
there's somebody who
Wait,
reminded me of him.
Before we move on to the final the main card, Alonzo Menifield versus Fabio Charrant.
What
was
that?
Von Flue choke.
That was a Von Flue?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And Alonzo, correct me, I think that's the guy who did that like standing back kick knockout like a month or so ago, that highlight. Remember the guy held his leg? Is that him or no?
I don't think
that was
him. I don't think that was him.
Okay. All right. I thought that when we were... I've misinformed somebody then. Okay.
But the anyway, Von Flue choke is pretty... It's... Like Rogan
the
was
OSP
saying,
choke,
the OSP choke. But Rogan, as he was describing it, he was using his lat to choke him out. And
that's how that works. Yep.
I couldn't see it because he's so jacked. I couldn't see
the choke.
Yeah.
And that was kind of why I wanted Tim to kind of elaborate, because it just looked like he was like kind of like smashing him, and then like the angle wasn't there on the camera.
Right.
Yeah.
I was like, what is happening?
Well, it is a smash. I mean, that is what's happening. So what happens is anytime you're holding a guillotine to, let's say, one side of your body, right? So you've got a guy's head trapped in a guillotine. You have his head pushed to one side of the body. If you guys fall down together and that guy whose head you have becomes cross body on you, he's not in your guard, he's not in a half guard, he's cross body, right? Mm-hmm. So you're holding onto a headlock in cross body, which you should never do because you'll never get it. It's impossible almost.
Are you saying from underneath?
Yeah. So I'm on the bottom. I have, let's say, John, I have your head. I'm holding it, but you're cross body now on top of me, and I'm still holding onto that head. And
so I'm
and
technically inside.
You are side control. That's what I mean by cross body. So you're side control, but your head is tucked under that far side arm, and I've got my other hand underneath, and I've got that choke. The problem is there's no leverage to get your neck complete because I don't have any control of your lower body. So your body can always turn and twist and release that pressure on the neck. The problem with you on the bottom with that Von Flute choke is when you have that headlock, the guy takes his lower arm. So let's take the arm that's facing the guy's leg. So John, your right arm, let's say, if your head is across my body and my feet are to your right, you trap that arm that's over top my head now, or over top your head. So you swim your hand over, and now that headlock, I can't release it. My hand is stuck inside there. It can't come out. And then the pressure is, because I've got a hold of a guy's head, and my own shoulder is pressing up into my neck. I know you guys can see what I'm talking about, but I'm holding onto it. And now I can't get that arm out because the guy has trapped that arm around the head. So now my shoulder is pressing into my neck, and then he rolls his body onto this side. So that's what they're saying with his lat. So he rolls his body up right to my head, and he's cutting this part off, and then I'm stuck. And I can't. If you could free that arm, you could get underneath and you could make the space and free this side up. You're crossbody and a guy's got you in, got your neck, right? So his arm is around your neck here, but you're laying on top of him crossbody. When you swim this hand over top and you grab your own hand, now that arm that's over your neck is stuck there. The guy can't get the arm out of there, and it forces his shoulder up here, and he can't release it. He can't release this side.
Wait, so how do I isolate your arm? Because my head's underneath in your armpit.
Yep. Your head's in the armpit, and then my arm is on the other side of your head.
So I'm swimming across your face.
You're swimming across the body because the arm is pointed down towards my feet over your head. So my arm is pointed down to your feet over your head, and you swim that far side arm, the one that's closest to my feet, over this hand, and it gets clamped. And
I'm underneath your back with my arm to grab that hand. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how
If you look at the photo on UFC.com, they have a still in their recap section. And as Tim is explaining it, you can see exactly how this happens. Like, it's just a still. And as you're explaining it, I can see exactly what's happening. Without the context, this looks so weird. It actually looks like Sharon has some sort of a weird guillotine.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when I was watching, I was like, I don't even.
But it's not. It's the reverse. It's so strange. But now that.
Yeah, it is weird.
Now that I've heard the explanation, I can see how this is happening. It's actually very interesting.
It's a nice, it's a nice joke for sure.
I feel like
Menafield is and so that was gigantic. And muscles that are killing him?
What's
what do you mean?
No, I was like, is it just muscles that he's saying. He's just like, I'm so muscly, you're dead.
That's what he was saying. He was like,
it's technique.
His lats were so big.
It doesn't take the muscles, though, to do it. It really doesn't.
Right.
And it showed a real lack of understanding from Sharant to know when you fall down and the guy's cross body and you have the headlock, you have to let it go because of that. Like, it's not just I don't need it, or I don't have it, or I'm never going to get this choke. That's not the worst part is you may not be able to get that arm out of there if you don't get it out of there then. Right. And it's not necessarily an instinctive thing for a guy on the ground, too, to think that. And I think that's why people get caught in it a lot. People use that head just to control a little bit. And especially, I think, in MMA, you're trying to keep the guy close to you because you realize you've fallen into a bad position. You don't want him raising up and then being able to rain down on you. So I think people latch onto that head because they just want to keep him tight and close to you while you maneuver and maybe get out of there. But yeah. If a guy falls complete side control like that on you and both arms are across your body, you got to get that arm out of there because it's very, very quick move to just trap that arm. And now you can't get it out. And then there's really not much you can do about it. There really isn't. Once the guy traps your arm, it's tough to get out of that.
Okay. So here's
what I still can't. It may not happen, but you won't get out.
I still can't tell where Menefield's right arm is.
Are you looking at that picture?
Looking at this picture. It almost looks like he's not forcing his own shoulder into that one side. It almost looks like he's got his arm on the right side of Charant's face. And he's kind of like cinching himself.
Well, I mean, isn't that what it is though? You are kind of cinching yourself.
That is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So it's not his lat that's actually...
No, but by rolling up to that to the top of his head, it's putting that pressure. It's squeezing
back
on one side.
But he has his arm on the right side, and then he's cinching his shoulder up into it. So it's not his lat actually isn't making the choke anymore. He transitioned it to something.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's just pressure on that neck. Just
right.
You're rolling all your weight up onto the neck, and then he's already choking himself on one side with the shoulder. Yeah, that was a good finish. But he should have caught that. He should have seen that sooner, unfortunately. But
it's a cool finish.
Did he get rocked a little bit before that?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But that's, you know, I'm always like, I always look at the advice that I'm giving. I'm like, oh, yeah. But after a couple shots to the dome, I don't know what my response would be.
Probably just hold on.
But you know what I do remember vividly?
Is Jamie Malarkey versus Kama
Holy
Worthy.
Frijoles.
Yeah. Dude.
That, like, what'd he do? It was a right feint. He feinted the right hook and then did like a leaping left hook.
Yeah. Yep.
That was right on the money.
That he never saw.
It was sick. That was Kama Worthy sick
never
finish.
Saw. He woke up asking Malarkey's coaches what happened.
He fell.
Never saw that punch.
He fell face forward. It wasn't even like he was falling back. He fell face plant.
Yeah.
Dude, jeez. He looked sharp.
He did.
Man. And I know Kama. I remember a bunch of Kama's fights. He's a game dude. That was a sick finish. That hook
you could tell
vicious.
That something was going to go wrong when Jamie came out. First of all, his level changes, his head movement. He was twitching all over the place, and then just moving in. And you know, a couple times, Kama threw a couple punches, a little combination, and Jamie was just like ducking and swinging, and you just saw his eyes were just zeroed in on Worthy's head, man. He was slipping and then just firing away. I think I think he deserves a bonus for that knockout for sure.
Yep.
He might have.
What division?
Lightweight.
And what do you have to do at that crazy weight division? Right? You
gotta do something.
You gotta get memorable, violent, like finishes, or it's just impossible because everyone's so legit up there. But that I think, he's only had a couple fights in UFC. That was like, that's his first real step up, and he just lit him on fire.
And
he looked ready. He looked ready for the next level.
It was on a big card. You know, he was opening up the big card, and that's the way you make the statement, right?
Yeah, matchmakers, that was the right call.
Yeah.
First fight of the main card, just nuts.
Moving on to women's flyweight. Three rounds.
Flyweight.
Yeah, again.
We were just talking about this last time. It's a great fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Miranda Maverick.
I was impressed with this fight for sure. And I always want Jillian Roberts to do better than she does.
You can tell she's just a little bit one-dimensional though. Like you can tell that the announcers were saying.
But
it's
she's
like,
so good at that one
top
thing.
Game is fire. everything else is just kind of like, yeah.
And I like the way that you said her top game is, because as I'm watching that fight, the first couple takedowns where Jillian just drags her to the ground, I was like, well, this is where she wants to be. And if Miranda can't figure this out, like, she is, this fight is going to be over here, because Jillian was so good at pulling her down. I was actually really impressed with Miranda's ability to at least survive in those moments. And she was moving, she was getting all over the place, but Jillian Roberts really impressed me with her super high level jiu-jitsu. She was turning and pivoting and changing and pulling her down on the other side. Like, she was doing a really good job of dragging this woman who looked twice her size, frankly, down to the ground and holding her down.
Oh man, the one note that I had for this fight is that Miranda looks like visibly really strong. Like, not in terms of like she's muscly, she is, but when you see people engage and then you can feel one person's strength because the other people are just moving, it just seemed like on the ground, and I don't have a super technical eye for what's happening on the ground, but it just seemed like she had that ability to just kind of make up her mind and power out of stuff, or like see the little opening and just move. Like, because she's so strong.
And I didn't think that in the first round. In the first round, I thought she was, you know, she was doing what you had to do, but it was a distinguishable difference in their ground games. And I just like, this is Jillian's area. And I just thought she was doing such a good job. And then I noted in the second round that even though she got pulled down, Miranda got pulled down again by Jillian, I was really impressed with how Miranda was surviving, never getting in a totally bad position, always moving. And Jillian had to keep readjusting. I thought actually that second round, I thought, was it first round or second round? I thought one of those rounds went to Jillian, but when you saw the cards, no judge gave her any.
Oh, I thought for sure she got the second round.
I thought so too, but
she controlled most of the time and she was really threatening. Like, she went for a couple.
It was the end of it though, right? It was the end of it where Miranda got up and then put her down.
Yeah. Right.
And she was stuck underneath.
One of the judges saw it. I think it was like, there was 2:30:27 or something like that. And then a 30.
Right.
30:29 or whatever. Yeah. Two of the judges had it as a clean sweep, but that was a little weird.
Didn't make any sense.
Miranda seems like a particularly interesting puzzle for flyweight.
Pressure. Though. She's a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure. Right.
Making that weight, I heard, was really hard. She said it was really hard making that weight. So let's see how that goes.
So it's something to watch, because that division is just, what is it? Flyweight? Yeah, that's Shevchenko.
And you know, Miranda's from around here.
Oh, they said she's like a teaching. She's getting her doctorate at Old Dominion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, she's in Virginia.
Can you imagine showing up in class the next week or something like that and being like, oh, I just saw you demolish someone on television?
Yeah. Speaking of which, and I don't want to divert us here, because I already feel myself, I'm already going to be late for my next appointment, but it's going to be worth it.
Your next podcast.
Semelsberger.
Yeah.
In that Bilal card, he was the opening fight.
With that 16-second KO.
Did you see that KO? Man, that guy's an impressive dude. And when you meet him in person, first of all, he's real nice, but I was going to say he looks as intimidating as he looks on TV, frankly.
I just saw him on Saturday.
Oh, he's from Frederick. And hearing them say from Frederick, Maryland, that was pretty nice too.
Right. So Tim is from Frederick, Maryland. And goes to the gym.
And I train at the same gym that Matt Semelsberger trains at. I'm a weekend warrior, and Matt Semelsberger is a vicious UFC fighter.
Have you ever rolled with him?
Belt. No.
Have you ever rolled with him?
Believe me, it is my focus to offer myself up to that dude. So I ran into him twice now. I ran into him on Tuesday night when I first one-on-one met him. I'd seen him over there training before, but I didn't know who he was. I'd never seen him actually in the UFC until Luke, who's the guy who owns the place, was like, you know, he's training in the UFC. I was like, no, I didn't know that. And then I saw him that night. And then that Tuesday, I ran into him when he was coming in to hit the bags. And I was like, Matt Semelsberger. And he turns around. He's like, yeah? I was like, bro, that knockout was so sweet. He's like, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Gave me a little fist bump.
Do you carry a belt there?
I wear my brown belt when I go in there. I train gi and no gi. So during the week, I'm training with the gi on. And then on Saturdays, which is, that's the last, I saw him this Saturday too. I don't wear the belt. I do no gi training on Saturdays.
Is your weight comparable enough where you might actually roll with him?
That'd be pretty cool. I was actually, here's my master plan, frankly.
Okay, good.
Is that I am going to go up to him, and I'm a brown belt. He's a blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and offer myself as a training partner to give him a hard time, to carry my weight. You know, I'm a good top player. Like if I could just give him a challenge, I might be able to get in his training camp, you know?
So, oh, that'd be so that'd cool.
Be so
that
good.
Would be so sweet if I could just be of service to him. That would be awesome.
What would be even sweeter is if he could join us on the MMA Lunch Break podcast.
He seems super approachable. So, you know, all that's in the future. But first, I just want to roll with him on the mat.
Yeah, that's all I want to happen. Anything on top of that would be great. I just want to roll with a UFC fighter.
Me too, man.
Okay, let's move it on in this card because this next fight was ridiculous.
Yeah. Sean
O'Malley, not Shane. No one say Shane.
Sean O'Malley.
Last podcast was a travesty of name Shane. Pronunciation.
Yeah. It's probably me.
No, it was me.
It's the sugar Shane part that got me caught up.
Yeah, Shane Mosley is why.
Yes. Dude, yes. Whoa. Dude. He is all fast twitch.
Yeah.
Yep.
Every fiber in his body is fast.
And did
twitch.
You see that he has that like reverse kick feint where he turns his head real quick
to the
right? And I was like, what is he doing? He is feinting a spinning kick.
Spins. Crazy. Because he has so many spinning techniques that he uses. He feints with his whole
even
head.
Even the kicks that missed when he spun, I was like, oh, that was close, man. And that was so on target. It would hit the guy's glove instead of his head. And I was like,
dude,
it's like a bullseye he's got with that foot.
Man. And Thomas Almeida is no joke. He's not a scrub, but he looked like one. He looked like one.
I don't know,
and
man.
His head is made of granite.
Yes,
his head is made of granite. That head kick that he just ate.
Yeah.
He wasn't out even for a second. Like, I know they were saying like, oh, you know, Sean should have pounced and everything like that. But like,
he wasn't
Sean
out.
Sean probably felt what just happened. Yep. He probably felt his shin go through his head and then cracked him. He cracked him. He wound up and cracked him right behind the gloves, right on, you know, right around the ear. And he was probably like, it's over.
It's
you know,
over.
Like I've had enough away. People in my life to understand what that just was. And Almeida was like, he caught himself, put his hands right back up, eyes clear. I was like,
that's what I thought. Yeah.
Gosh.
He fell right to his butt and got right into the corner of the octagon, like hit it, sat down. And I think he thought it was coming because he immediately put his hands up to cover. And then Sean looked back and was like, oh. And he gave it a look like he almost shrugged his shoulders like, oh, you want more? Okay. And he turned around and went back after it. I actually thought, you know, that, man, the announcers are giving him such a hard time for not closing that deal then. And I don't know if I agreed with that necessarily. Like, to your point, I don't think he was that out of it. And I think that you still would have had to struggle to put him away. But it might have been a good opportunity for Sean to jump down and execute some ground game. But I also thought it was nice for him to go almost the entire three rounds too, because he doesn't see a lot of time in the ring. So for him, I thought it was good.
But I think we saw examples of this later on where the instinct to kill overrides your smarter inclinations. And I think for someone like Sean, who had such command over the exchanges on the feet, like why
risk it?
Why jump down there? Why engage on that kind of thing? I know there's a chance for a quick finish, but like, I didn't mind just like, okay, trusting yourself a little bit, like, you know, like just focus on your skills, focus on your distance. I thought his coaching was great between the rounds. The guy was just like, just dance on him, you know, like get it moving. He cannot get a beat on you. Just keep, I didn't have a problem with him not diving down there. It was like, there's no need to blow your wad. Like, his conditioning is clearly next level. Like, he didn't even look like he was sweating at the end of the third. I didn't have a huge problem with him not jumping down there.
And to your point, it wasn't that he did. I don't know that it wasn't that he didn't jump down there so much for me as I think he thought it was over. Like, I think he thought,
it was
he had
over.
Hit him so hard that it was done. And then he turned around and was just as surprised as us, you know? So it's not that he wouldn't or couldn't or didn't make the decision to. It's that he didn't think that was a decision to make.
But he didn't freak out. He didn't freak out and try and like, oh, you know, bum rush, get it done kind of thing. Right. And then coincidentally, like the next time, right before the actual finish, it should have been over.
Same thing.
Yeah.
The guy shouldn't have, but now O'Malley's in the position where he's got to really finish this fight.
Yep.
And so he jumps down and just freaking executes Almeida. And it's like, okay, well, that's a year off Almeida's life that he didn't need to lose.
Yeah. But again, I think in that situation, if you watch it back again, Thomas Almeida was not out of that either. He fell back.
Out of it,
his head was up. He had his weapons there, but I think it was squirrely because Sean walked away again. Turned around, was like, oh, no, it's not over again. And then casually walked up with his hands down by his side, was like walking. And then he just threw that overhand and just hit him square in the temple, man. I just think he was not expecting that. Right. I don't think he was expecting that either. I think he could have and was still capable of fighting Thomas.
Usually something that it wasn't egregious. I'm not mad at the ref, but usually in that scenario, when someone has taken all of the damage for the course of all three rounds.
Yeah.
And was nearly finished before. Usually they're pretty quick to end the fight if it starts getting to me with the Almeida thing, it was like once he uncorked that one and he went down and he kind of like log rolled out of it to try and save himself a little bit because he didn't know where he was. I was like, just call it. And then he
need to deliver that last one.
Right? And it was bad. That one was bad. He bounced off the canvas.
He is all about the highlights, man. Sean O'Malley.
He's smart, dude.
I think he knows. He's a showman and he knows it. So he knows. I think part of having those, you know, walk-off KOs, it's like part of his, you know, quote-unquote character. You know, it's like the image. So I don't mind it at all.
I'm sure every UFC fighter wishes that was part of their character. Except walk off KOs.
Man, he is just
Mark Hunt
is
struggling
so,
getting to the end decision.
You know what's crazy about him too is he's so tall for that division and he uses it. He actually uses it. He's sharpened techniques that you know are more effective because he's so long.
Yeah,
he's a problem down
and
there.
Those, you can't overstate his feint game, man. Can you imagine somebody already longer than you who's just second after
like
second
Izzy.
Throwing
it's
a feint
like
that,
Izzy.
That you have to look out for? Yeah, he is.
But
because Izzy does it with his hips.
Yeah, and Izzy's hips, he's way more subtle. Like Sean is like everything's at warp speed, and he's so powerful. I just want to see I want to see him versus sort of like non-conventional guy. I want to see him like. Versus Dom or versus like I'm sure someday we'll see like Sandhagen and Dillashaw because that's a fight they just made. So like I want to see like does the loser that's all bantam, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Like the loser of a Sandhagen versus Dillashaw fighting O'Malley. Like non traditional stuff. Cause to me, if you keep feeding him up these sort of traditional plodding guys, he's just gonna run through them.
I think you got to push him up a little bit.
You got to push
him higher
hard
level
now.
Top five competition. Yeah. I think he's ready. I'm excited to see it.
I think he's ready too. All right.
Tyron. Yeah. Tyron Woodley, Vicente Luque, welterweight.
So
first round one finish by submission. Yeah,
first. That I loved the start of that fight.
Oh,
yeah. I loved
it. Yeah, exactly.
That was the Tyron Woodley that you wanted to see.
I literally
just
was like,
barrage,
he's back. I was
punching,
yes, he's back.
Yeah, trying to kill you, hit you, push you up against the fence, drop you down, pick you up. Like that was, I mean, that I think that's the scariest part of Tyron Woodley. And one of the comments that they were saying is that, you know, sometimes he hangs back because he knows he has that explosive power to run you down real quick and throw an overhand.
Rogan was
right.
Like, he's carrying the nuclear option at all times.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But you know what? I don't know that he is anymore. You know, look at his last four fights.
No, he has the option. It's just a matter of if he lands the option.
Well,
because
he did,
he
and he had Luque on skates a little bit.
He had a mount.
But just like we were saying, I think this fight and then potentially the next one we're going to talk, I think these guys are so eager when they see a glimmer. Like, yep. I think Tyron's probably got so much weight on his shoulders being on this losing streak.
Yeah.
That when he saw he rocked him, he was like, he let me get in there and finish. And then he is winding drunk all the way up, throwing these super looping things. And Vicente and was just in the pocket.
Straight down the pipe.
Yeah, fired some stuff down the pipe. And that was it. And like, I kind of have like, I know Tyron's been losing, but he is not losing. Like he got rocked and he was still able to stay on his feet and kind of, and then the finish came. But like Tyron, for me, it's like, okay, he went too far into the aggressive route from being too far on the passive route.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To me, he just needs to kind of find the balance and pick his spots a little bit more. And
yeah,
he's still a super dangerous fighter. I would almost like to see him go dominate in like Bellator or just take an easy fight in the UFC for one. Like, if they don't cut him, just like take a low level, just get a tune-up fight to get yourself back. Stop taking these killers. Like, stop. Well, just build yourself back a little bit.
He had to.
Yeah, maybe.
He took the ones that made the most, like you fell from the top and you want to quickly reestablish that that's where you belong. You're taking the number two, the number four, the number five ranked guys. This was a tough one, man. This was number 10.
Yeah. I like Tyron. I don't think he needs to retire.
Do you, I was going to say, I don't think so either. And I like your option where he goes to a different organization and runs his, continues his training and his career there. I just don't know that he's going to ever get back to the top of this division. This is a very difficult division anyway.
Well, like,
I just don't see him improve. I don't see him getting back to the top of this division.
I mean, I think that's safe to say. But like, even with this fight, after he had Luque rocked, like, I really wanted him, dude. Why doesn't he just blast him with a double leg and just smash him out? Like, he's still going for those like haymakers, and they're so wide. Like it's like a Street Fighter punch. You know what I mean? It's not even. Like he's just
trying to knock his head off.
Yeah.
And he teased me too, because he came out of the gates, just rushed him and then grabbed a hold of him. And I was like, oh, he's got a hold of him. And then within 10 or 15 seconds up against the fence, Vicente turns it.
Yeah. Reverse position.
Reverses him, pushes him up against the fence. And that's the Tyron we've seen the last four fights.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's like mentally, he just kind of accepts it.
He's like, I'm going to knock someone out today, and that's all I can do. But it was like, it's crazy because like after he got rocked by Vicente, he fired back and then rocked Vicente again. Like it was, there was like a back and forth right there. And like, dude, just drop down, change levels, you know, grab his legs, do something. But he can't.
I'm also here for Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Like if guys want to do that,
too.
I'm here for it.
I like that
too. It's just weird in Tyron's case where it's like, he's a great wrestler.
Dude.
Why does he not wrestle anymore?
Also, he needs a win. This guy was champion. He needs a win, not...
That's kind of why I feel like a fresh start in a different organization.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Feed him.
And listen, he was rocked too at the end too. Yeah. So that Darce choke, as much as you can complain that you should have known, you should feel that coming on or whatever. Yeah. He was Bambi-legged on his standing up.
100%. He didn't know where it was.
10 seconds. And actually, he looked like he was trying to play it cool, but his legs were giving him away.
Yeah.
Like he leans back on the fence, he keeps his hands up, but his legs, who are like hyperextending on him at unusual times.
It's like, oh man, Tyron,
I know your face says you're cool, but your legs tell a different story.
Jeez. All right, let's move on. We're nearing the 1 hour marker.
Gotcha.
It is the era. It's the Francis Ngannou era now.
I think it's clear.
This.
Oh my goodness.
And
this was
the Khalil Roundtree reference that I wanted to give was here because I thought of him when we were watching this fight. And let me walk you to it if you don't see it directly. There's some bets you can make like, I don't even remember who we wagered on this one specifically, but I know after seeing the first fight, there's a, you know, you think you're going to see pretty much the same fighter, and you did not see the same fighter in Francis Ngannou. You saw the wrestling that I saw with him was incredible. His sprawl to spread to when Stipe got rocked and went in for that single leg, and Francis flattened him out and sprawled that thing out, and then quickly turns the corner and gets to
transition,
his back.
Transition,
yeah. He took his back.
When I saw him, oh my God, man. His, Francis Ngannou has a ground game, yeah. Who is going to take him off of that pedestal?
It was like when Yoel Romero, he moved like Yoel, that spin to take his back, that and then started punching up under his arm. That was Yoel Romero.
To see the freaky athleticism that we have always seen on the feet, on the mat,
on the ground,
with the transition speed at his mm-hmm. size, carrying 30, 40 pounds on Stipe the night of the fight. Like,
yeah,
he looked to be the faster fighter at nearly 40 pounds heavier than Stipe.
And his hands look good too, man. He was throwing some straights. He had good cover. I noticed, man, that his just blocking, his right
his
hand
distance control
right next to his
was
head.
A little bit better too. Like
he wasn't
all this wild stuff.
Yeah.
Like he always seemed to be kind of off balance. Like his arms were so muscular and heavy
and
that
just
like he would swing and it would like carry his weight different ways.
Yep.
He seemed like he had it all.
Yep.
Managed.
I thought his footwork mm-hmm. looked good too, man. Great. He was moving the legs out of the way of the calf kick. Yeah.
He threw some, man, though.
Yeah, he was throwing the kicks.
Different Ngannou than I thought I was going to see. Way more polished.
Dude,
way better on the ground. Way, that snapback, when he snapped Miocic down, it looked like a professional guy who had been wrestling half his life.
But then what we saw was Stipe clipped Francis and thought he had hurt him. Mm-hmm. You know, there was like that crazy exchange where Francis
right
kind of, yeah, Francis kind of had Stipe rocked and then Stipe fired back and clipped Francis.
And yeah.
Got him. Yeah, he got him. But he thought he had maybe rocked him and yeah. Francis was not rocked.
Nope.
And
right.
Walked him straight into that left hook.
So tight.
It was a nuclear bomb. Of a hook with the leg pinned underneath,
folded him
of the ragdoll
over his legs. Yeah,
oh man! And like Stipe's hair situation too, I thought made things look even worse.
Yeah, because it whipped back.
Yeah. His, right.
Yeah.
Because I think what he's doing is he similar haircut to myself. He's wearing it back in a hat as he walks into the ring.
That's what it was.
Control it, and then he takes the hat off with no product. And it's just
any product in his hair.
Pinned, it's like up. And so when he was getting hit, his hair was like
just fanning
letting
out,
everyone
like,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah. What had happened.
It's whipping back.
Man.
I rewatched a couple of the fights this morning with Lauren and like they're starting and she goes, wait, is this before the fight? Is his hair look like that before the fight? I'm like, yeah, I guess he just decided not to put any product in there.
Just get some water or something. I was like, what is going on?
Something.
No one in the heavyweight division can beat Francis Ngannou.
Hold on.
No one.
Okay, let's talk about this.
Let's talk about this.
So they immediately jump to the John Jones thing, right?
Yes.
Everyone on earth immediately jumped to that.
John Jones is going to make a
Jones
cut.
Jones is tweeting.
He's going
Jones
back down
tweeting,
to
like, show me the money.
He's
da, da, da.
He's,
yeah.
He's
show me the money.
Back down.
And then Dana White in the post fight, they ask him about it. And Dana's like, listen, a lot of people say they want to fight Francis. If he wants to fight Francis, he should call Hunter right now.
Right.
He was like, he should call Hunter right now. John Jones should call Hunter right now if he actually wants to fight Francis.
Right.
And then Dana White said what I was actually thinking, which is the fight to make is Derek Lewis, Francis Ngannou.
100%. Yes.
That is the fight.
Yeah.
Derek Lewis is the only man on earth who possesses the punching power and the athleticism for me to think in my brain
maybe
that this man might stand a chance against Francis.
Because
he has to cut to 265.
And the new Derek Lewis is going to only be better than the
last
one.
And he is blasting people. And he is a true heavyweight where he has to cut to 265
right.
just like Francis has to cut to 265. Not going to be walking in there at 230 like Stipe.
Yeah.
And I think Jones's whole plan was to move up to fight Stipe.
Stipe. Yeah.
I don't think he actually wants Francis. No. And now that it's here, he's like, show me the money, and then he can do the whole money thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because after seeing that, Jones gets hit. He's just always had a good chin, and he does enough to make things sort of like glancing blows. But he gets hit by everyone. We used to talk about it all the time that like there was that whole, we were talking like MMA trying, like I think John Jones always beats DC, but
DC,
you know,
beats,
like Gustafson beats, you know, whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then the one person that was always left out of it, and I'm blanking on his name now, he got gigantic after he retired. And now he's going back to Bellator at heavyweight. He's the most powerful guy in the UFC for forever, and he fought at 205. Remember, he blasted Gustafson in Stockholm.
What? Yoel Romero? No.
No. Wait. No.
Gosh.
Hold, please.
Hold
on. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who you're talking about.
Are you talking about... No, you're not talking about...
He got on steroids, started bodybuilding.
Oh, Anthony Johnson.
Anthony Johnson.
Oh, Rumble
Anthony
Johnson.
Johnson.
Rumble, yeah. Johnson. I always thought the fight for Jones to really see was someone with crippling power. You know? Yeah. That like where he couldn't afford to get hit kind of thing. And he managed, you know, the hammer, Brazilian hammer.
Yeah.
He managed him pretty well.
Thiago Santos.
You know, but like these guys hit him. He gets hit and his face shows it. And I just feel like going up against Francis and not being able to wrestle him to death and having to strike with him for a significant portion, I just don't think that that's a real fight.
Within five rounds, he's going to catch a glancing blow, and a glancing blow from Francis it's going to knock him out, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Francis is probably like just as fast. I don't see any like, maybe I'm thinking of it differently, but we just saw Adesanya go up against, go up and wait to fight.
Jan
Blachowicz.
Mm-hmm.
And the size, when it's that much,
it
when
matters.
It's like 30 pounds, it's very obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really matters. And it's going to be legit 30 to 40 pounds again. We just saw it with Stipe. Like,
mm-hmm.
If I was Jon Jones,
I don't necessarily want to see it.
You just stay home.
I kind of want to see Jones
Israel
fight.
If Israel wants to stay up there and prove that it's not size, I'd like to see that.
I want to see Jon fight.
Is it really not size, Israel?
I want to see Jon fight Blachowicz. You know,
maybe.
I want to see him fight these new 205ers that are, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, like another name,
Derek Lewis too. That's what I want.
That I think is a much more practical matchup in terms of like, this is like a realistic heavyweight fight. Another name that was being thrown around is Curtis Blaydes, but
mm-hmm.
Curtis Blaydes was a, you know, his main weapon is wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
But so is Stipe.
Curtis Blaydes just got sent to hell.
Yeah.
By Derek Lewis.
Yeah. And then so who's going to fight Francis? There's no one for a while.
It's Derek.
I mean,
it's Derek.
That's the fight to
make. If he wants the money.
I don't
think. If they give him the right money.
I don't think so. You know who needs to come back?
But I do kind of think that he's maybe just using that.
Brock Lesnar needs to fight Francis Ngannou. that would be... You want to make money? That's how you make money. That's how you make money.
Yeah. There's good wrestling in there too.
Yeah.
Don't forget. Yeah, that'd be great. Hey, I don't remember who made what calls on this last card, but just so I said it because I promised I would. I've imagined a belt for us, like at the end of the year, the most correct predictions on a fight.
Wins.
And the belt buckle is shaped like a lunchbox. And the lunchbox opens on the front and it reveals our name underneath there for the champion.
Wait, are you going to fashion this?
I must
this?
Have spent, we. I think we spent a half hour just noodling through the design of this championship prediction belt for the MMA lunch break.
If you can get Lauren to, if you can get Lauren to draw something,
she's already sketching it up.
I know a guy. We used to work with him. He could probably make it for us.
Perfect.
Wait, Edgington is gone.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, you know what? That's fine. Yeah, we got through the card. That's fine. Edgington is gone. He left us.
He's like, time's up.
Oh, there he is. And he's there back.
Jumping back in.
Any last words?
Oh, well, I'm just happy to be back. No, I am excited for the next Fight Night card, which is Till versus Vettori. Darren Till versus Marvin Vettori is an awesome fight. And I can't believe that's going to be on one of the free ones. So I'm excited about that one.
So I guess we're done for today. This is the worst ending ever.
This is the best ending.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah. Clean it up at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll clean it up. We'll catch you later.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Okay, technology wins today.
All right.
See you on the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.